Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And welcome back to another episode of 99 Potions, the premier Fanbyte RPG podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Miriam Strum, senior managing editor of Fanbyte.com. I am joined, as is always and forever, and has never not been the case, one Eric Van Allen of Destructoid.
Yes, only ever of Destructoid, never of many other websites on this God-given internet. Hello, hi.
Never, exactly. Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's been a time. I've been diving deep down the RPG rabbit hole that is Xenoblade Chronicles 3, and I'm ready to eat a lot of crow on this podcast. It's going to be great.
Oh, awesome.
Ah, shit. Cool. Crow.
Love that.
Mm-hmm. Crow's in this one.
Piping
huh?
Hot crow.
I love that character. Joining me also are two special guests that we just kind of like found on the street wandering around in the dust and by the tumbleweeds. We've got news editor for fanbyte.com, Imran Khan.
I feel like now in retrospect, the funnier introduction would have been to introduce us as a Normandy FM episode with this genre on it.
Sorry, yeah, Ken. I've replaced you with three people. I'm moneyballing this.
Oh no. We are also joined by what? Oh, by God, that's John Warren's music.
I'm back. I've been away. I've been on the coast of Alaska. I've also
from parts unknown, John Warren.
I've also contracted many illnesses, but I'm here. I'm here today, and here to talk about one of my favorite meta series of all time. It's very exciting. I'm glad we're doing this.
Yeah, I love the Alien franchise of, you know, Fireteam Elite, mm-hmm. Isolation, all that stuff. So we're here to talk about the Xenomorphs, which is great stuff.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Miriam, if you love the Aliens franchise, you should play Live Alive.
Really?
Oh, yes. That's accurate.
Yeah. God damn it. There's just every podcast I've been on for the past, like, 3 weeks. I was on the Giant Bombcast. I've been on Channel F. I've been on 99 Potions. Everybody keeps telling me to play Live Alive.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, if you love Aliens, they also very clearly love Aliens.
Okay.
Alien. That's good to know. I feel like the first Alien more than Aliens.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Alien. Yeah. Singular.
Okay, well, I'll keep that in
just
mind.
One alien this time.
God, it's not like I have a bunch of other stuff to play.
Nah.
Games like Xenoblade Chronicles 3, which is actually what I'm talking about. Actually, what this document note says here says is, I don't know what I just said, even. What this document says is Xeno Gears Blade Saga 2, The Quest for Less Money.
That's
which is a
really
funny
good.
Joke. I don't know. I bet I'm almost certain that the Xenoblade Chronicles franchise makes more money now than the Xenoblade Saga.
Oh, yeah. It definitely does. This it didn't look like it would for a while, but is now actually a surprisingly successful RPG series.
Against all odds.
Yeah. Only took Takahashi, 24 years to get there?
Listen, it's the Fanbyte motto of just keep doing shit until eventually people like it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Until people stop giving you money, just keep doing what you think works.
Exactly. We are going to be going through, I think, probably primarily in order, which means we'll get to the newest game last, which will be Xenoblade Chronicles 3, but we'll bounce around and jump around and do whatever we want, because that is how we roll. We're the bad boys of video gaming. if we are starting with that, though, we can
talk
about...
The bad boys and thems.
The bad boys and them, one singular.
But yeah, I mean, the actual question I have for everybody to really start things off is, like, what is everybody's relationship with this series, franchise, meta-narrative? And I'll start with Eric, since you are the regular host and everything like that, so you get first dibs.
The regular host. Oh, God. Mm-hmm. That, why are you foisting more podcasting duties on me? yeah, so, like, Xeno series.
Xeno Warrior Princess.
Yes, mm-hmm. Xeno Warrior Princess. I started with Xeno Saga back on the PlayStation 2 because as much as I played some PlayStation 1 RPGs, my RPG playing did not really kick off until Final Fantasy X on the PlayStation 2, which was a hugely, hugely influential game and series on me. If you want to hear more about that, go check out Normandy FM, the retrospective we did on Final Fantasy X there. Let you know, play the Super Bowl. But Xeno Saga was this game I went to kind of looking for something like that. And what I wound up finding was just the most bonkers, like, all over the place meta narrative, like, Christian imagery. It was the closest thing to Evangelion I had seen since, like, seeing Evangelion. Yeah. Just in the fact that someone was clearly obsessed with, like, crosses and biblically correct angels and things like that. And I loved it. That stuff was great. Takahashi was about, like, 5-10 years ahead of the game on the whole android robot girl thing with 2B and Nier Automata. Cosmos is great. And then I dabbled in the other games, but never really got far in them. And then Xenoblade came out, and I didn't really play my Wii much. So I, you know, Chronicles 1 passed me by. Chronicles 2 looked like it was a trap. Like, you just got sent to jail if you bought that game. So I just passed
and
on
it. And you should be.
Yeah, it's I've often described it as weird science, the anime JRPG, because it is literally a game about a small boy child and his tall, hot girlfriend's sword. And I've never been able to get past that. I don't think I ever will get past that. I'm sorry.
Weird.
Bill Paxton is in this one too, which is interesting.
It's incredible.
Bill Paxton in his final role, Xenoblade Chronicles,
as Rex
too.
From Xenoblade.
As Rex from
Xenoblade. But yeah, Xenoblade 3. Not to get, like, too far ahead of the ball here, but Xenoblade 3 might be one of my favorite games I've played this year.
Interesting.
Rips. It is so good. In ways that, number one, I did not think the series could be, even enjoying Xeno Saga 1 a lot. But also, it just feels like the big RPG that the Switch has needed for a while. I feel like the Switch has long been, you know, kind of a home for retro RPGs and like homages to classic gaming. You have, like, Octopath and Triangle Strategy, both of which are great games, but feel very nostalgic. And this is the closest thing we've had to, like, a big budget. I keep comparing Xenoblade 3 to Tales of Arise because it feels like the Tales of Arise moment for this series.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. I mean, if you want to know my history with the Xeno meta franchise, I mean, I was a Xeno Gears OG. Played that game, and it really blew my mind back in, you know, 98, 99, whenever I played it. And yeah, I've been just really interested in Tetsuya Takahashi ever since. I think that the Xeno Saga series is, like, enormously flawed and goofy, but it's so big. They take so many big swings in that thing. like, go back and play the Xeno Saga trilogy if you haven't. It's, like, it's totally, totally, totally worth it if you like just the biggest, boldest bullshit you can imagine in your JRPGs. And Xenoblade, I think, like, in terms of, you know, mechanics and scope and clarity, I think Xenoblade is really tight, you know, compared to the rest of their other games. But they're still sprawling and huge and interesting, and they seem like a real evolution of what I feel like they wanted to do with the original Xenogears in terms of making something that has scale and weird platforming, honestly, like, you know, hey, can I make this platforming work kind of stuff in a JRPG, which is like finicky and kind of goofy and maybe not what you want from a JRPG, but it's like it kind of helps kind of, you know, build out the sense of scale of this like really large world. And they got that all the way back in Xenogears. So there's a lot of stuff that they really started, you know, 25 years ago. You see a lot of those things in Xenoblade, even up to the brand new Xenoblade Chronicles 3, which I also think is very good. I've not played that much of it, but I think it is very clearly a good culmination of a bunch of lessons learned from Xenoblade 1, 2, and then X. So yeah, I'm excited to get deeper into that.
For me, I remember borrowing Xenogears from a friend as a kid, and I don't think at that time in my life of being a 14-year-old who had mostly just played Final Fantasy games, like,
yeah,
the comparison that came into my head like a couple of months ago, and I feel like it still kind of holds, is if Final Fantasy 7 and 8 and 8 were like the Uncharted 2 of JRPGs, then Xenogears was like Binary Domain. Like, ooh, okay, a game that like is actually very interesting, but boy, if you're only used to Uncharted 2, that's gonna be like a real fucking hard no when that's your touchstone at the moment. So like I didn't play it then. I've never actually gone back to it. I've seen like let's plays and read synopses, and it's like it all seems like a very interesting narrative that maybe kind of a chore to play, especially when you already know the story. So I've never gone back to it. Maybe someday in my life, maybe if they remake it, who knows? Would I might do so. Xenosaga, I bought the first one. I remember that game came out at a time where I think it came out probably a decade too early of people going, well, I'm not even playing. You're not playing this game. You're just watching it. Because I remember that was a thing people used to say about games like Xenosaga and like Metal Gear and stuff like that. Of, I can't believe there's 15, 20 minutes between or in this cutscene between this and the next battle. Uh-huh. I remember that like being a thing that really bothered me. And I don't think it would bother me now. I think it bothered me then because that was the conversation of these aren't games because you're just watching them. And I was very easily influenced by that.
Yeah. Right? I feel like JRPGs also suffered from like the overlong. This was the height of like overlong summon animations as well. Like where it was just like the cutscenes are too long, but also partially it was just like, boy, every random battle. It was also like the height of random battles. Like, I feel like JRPGs for a long time were kind of like in decline until really, at least in the West, until really Persona kind of really revitalized a lot of that stuff. With like Persona 4, I remember being like an especially big deal when it came to Vita and people getting like way into that and kind of pinning a lot of the hopes and dreams of stuff there. And then, you know, obviously JRPGs are kind of back in vogue now, but there was a time there where Binary Domain is a really good example, because that's like a very good game from that era of a bunch of Japanese developers doing not very good games that are a lot of third-person shooters that were trying to be Uncharted, that were trying to be Gears of War, and not really getting it all the way. And then, I think we've kind of moved back into a place of like people being like, I don't know, I have a different idea, and Xenoblade feels like a different thing. Xenoblade doesn't feel like anything else right now.
Yeah. Xenoblade, so I remember playing Xenoblade because I remember the launch hype towards that, or not hype, I guess. The people looking at that like pictures with kind of bemused interest. Because, like, it looked real ugly on the Wii. It was not a good-looking game at all until you, like, leave that first area and you, like, you see the rest of the big open world and what it's actually trying to go for. But, like, you look at the PR shots Nintendo sent in 2007 and be like, what is this game? Why does this look like this? Why do people look like they have weird, blurry mouths and the fruit looks like a flat texture and all that? And it's because they weren't very good at that stuff, and the Wii was not a very powerful system. But, I think that kind of I think Nintendo of America also looked at that stuff. It was like, no, we're not bringing this over. And it was like really interesting. I don't think I would have probably been interested in the game until Nintendo said, no, you can't have it.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, now I'm very interested in it. Now I want to play this.
It was a thing that I don't think a lot of people even remember at this point, but it was part of Operation Rainfall.
Yeah, it was like the main thrust of that thing. Because like it was that, The Last Story, and
Pandora's Tower.
Pandora's Tower, yeah.
Three games we all remember so fondly.
Everybody's always talking about Pandora's Tower and The Last Story.
A lot of people really like Last Story, too.
Yeah, actually. I liked The Last Story. I did.
It should get released on something else. It never will. But
yeah.
But yeah, I ended up buying Xenoblade because it was a GameStop exclusive, if I recall correctly.
Really?
Yeah.
You could buy it
at GameStop.
Wow. Right. There was like a bunch of weird stuff. They were selling like used copies for more than the cost of the game new because it was like rare. But then like there were like accusations of GameStop opening up copies so it would count as used.
Oh my God.
So they could sell it for more than MSRP. That was a weird thing. But yeah, that did. Like, I don't remember how much evidence there was of the intentionally opening stuff, but they were definitely selling it for like $70 and stuff like that. Like used.
Yeah. And I remember that game came out, I think, 2 weeks before I was going to take a trip to, like, Portland and San Francisco and to, like, just visit some family, whatever. So I figured, okay, I can beat this game in 2 weeks. One, that's a terrible idea. Two, I did this while I think Frasier had just come to Netflix. So I started watching. I was binging Frasier. So now I have in my head an indelible link between Xenoblade and Frasier that will just never go away. And, like, I remember this coming up when Shulk got revealed for Smash Brothers, because they played Xenoblade music, and that Xenoblade music in my head triggered memories of Frasier. So, so I've had Pavlovian reaction.
Reveal, yeah. Put toss salad and scrambled eggs over Shulk doing a backslash.
Frasier is really feeling it.
Now it's Niall's time.
But, yeah, I really fucking enjoyed that game. I bought 2 much later because I think 2 came out at just the worst time. 2 came out like weeks after Mario Odyssey. No, it came out 2 months after Mario Odyssey. But like also that was just it was a busy time. I didn't have time to play Xenoblade 2. I think I just started at Game Informer at the time. So yeah, it was very busy. I didn't play 2 until recently, and I really like it. I think it's a very good video game. But also, this was like 6 months ago because I did a micro review for it on Fanbyte. That game just an autosave. And I ended up losing to a crash several hours of gameplay that I've just not gotten back to since then. Yeah. And now that Xenoblade 3 seems really good, I probably will go back to it and actually like finish that game at some point.
That's what I've been doing. I finished Xenoblade 1. Because my experience, I didn't play Xenogears when it came out, but I played a bunch of it when we did an episode talking about Xenogears for 99 Potions very early on at the beginning of 99 Potions run. I never touched Xenosaga. Xenosaga was always like the butt of a bunch of X-Play jokes, and that was what I knew about Xenosaga. And Xenoblade Chronicles 1, I played it on the Wii, I played it on the 3DS, and then I played it on the Switch, and I never beat it any of those times. And I was like, I always get about like halfway through, or got about halfway through to the part where you get to the big snowy mountain after going to Prison Island, and I think it's like almost exactly the halfway mark of the game according to people.
Yeah.
So I did that twice. I did it once on the Wii and I did it once on the 3DS version, and then I did it again on the Switch version. Finally came back and beat it like in the last like 2 weeks. Then I have also been doing the same thing with Xenoblade Chronicles 2 to lead up to Xenoblade Chronicles 3, because people are hyping up Xenoblade Chronicles 3 like it is actually like genuinely super, super good. I think Xenoblade Chronicles 2, as somebody who is playing that game, partially this is the result of me having to get back into that game 60% of the way through after 3 years or whatever since I last played it. But I think Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is pretty bad, mostly. I think the story and dialogue are, I mean, I'm using English voice acting, which is probably a mistake because it's really just not very good.
No, but Nerium, even... that's not true. No, don't say that about the voice acting.
Well, some people sound like that, but then there's like Tetsuya Nomura characters, which I don't know if you knew that, but like, so yeah, the main character Rex, who's just this like little fucking little lad who does sound like this. He's the worst.
I think people from looks like that and sounds have like American accents for whatever reason.
Oh, I and they also that. Look like Kingdom Hearts characters. Yes, uh-huh. For whatever reason.
Yep.
What if Nomura made his own country? Like, literally made his own country.
I don't want
Nomuria.
That.
Oh my god.
That absolutely sounds like the name of a webcomic that like is about what I'm talking.
It's an Undertale alt fiction waiting to happen right there.
So yeah, like I haven't played 3 yet because I do want the context, but boy, I ranted about it already on Channel F this week. People can go listen to Channel F on fanbyte.com/podcasts, but I think the game is over-designed and very sloppy in some places.
How mm-hmm. far are you in that game?
I'm like nearly done. I'm like, okay. I think I have like 2.5 chapters left.
Okay. Cause I was going to say, I do think it gets better over time, but if you're already that far in and you're like, I'm not feeling it, you're really not feeling it.
I'm not feeling it. Sorry, the vibes are off.
I refuse to take part in this mockery of accents on here. I will not feel it.
Eric, join the fray.
Oh, no. I can't. I've had to eat so much crow because I declared that I would never play Xenoblade Chronicles because of how ridiculous the accents are.
Oh.
And I now hate to admit that one of my favorite parts of 3 is the character Yuni, who has the most unabashed uh-huh. accent in the world. Yep. And mm-hmm. honestly, I'm like completely there for it. She's yep. great. So, this Xenoblade Chronicles 3 is the story of me like eating my own words.
The Monolith localization team was all they've got in their room is a copy of Dick Van Dyke doing the Chimbley sweep from fucking Mary Poppins. They're like, I guess this is just it.
So I have to assume this is the way it is because of the weird way it got localized, where Nintendo of America passed on it, Nintendo of Europe didn't. So they localized it in Europe. And then they just reuse that localization for America. So now it has, like, by this weird hook and crooks circumstance, has a European, like, basis for its localization.
It's not completely outside the realm of, like, because, like, Final Fantasy 14 also just inexplicably, like, I feel like the, like, you know, British accent is the go-to for any sort of vaguely Ivalice adjacent style or like high fantasy style.
Well, in the case of Final Fantasy 14, they also, specifically switched from like doing a California based like agency for voice acting to a British one, like for Heavensward. You haven't gotten to that point yet.
Oh, Ron. Oh, okay. I was going to say, I'm still Walker.
I'm still gathering food for some kind of fucking festival. Just like, let me fight the fucking Titan. Yeah. Last night was frustrating.
Incredible.
I don't mind the act. Like, honestly, a lot of the accents in these games don't bother me that much.
They don't bother me. It's just so unbelievably predictable. Like I could now identify a Xenoblade game by audio. Like it's not bad. Like it's not unpleasant to me, but it is funny. Very funny. Right.
Yeah. I think it's just really particularly a mess in 2 because that game is so just sprawling and weird in a lot of ways and has like too much going on most of the time.
It does have a lot going on. Yeah.
I will say though that 2's environment art is like next level.
Oh, it's very all cool. of the environment art mm-hmm. across all of these games. X is 1, 2, 3. We didn't even mention X.
Oh yeah, we fucking didn't mention X. Holy shit! I completely
Nintendo,
forgot X existed.
That's the one I've played the least, and I want them to bring it to Switch, but they probably never will. I guess
no. Nintendo's like, we've brought all Xenoblade, the entire series to the Switch, and then someone in the back is like, what about X? And they're like, we've brought all Xenoblade games.
Escort that man out of the audience.
Which is a huge bummer to me because I fucking love mechs. I don't know people. No, have you heard about this? I love mechs and mech shit. And that game has like some of the coolest mech shit in it.
That game is actually pretty good, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's just
it is. Right here.
It was not what anyone wanted after Xenoblade 1, I think. And I think people, because the Wii U was a failure, so many games had these unrealistic expectations put on them to be like, oh, this is the real Final Fantasy 13, because this is the game that like we want to be like the next big thing. And it's not. It's its own different thing that is very different from what the last thing was. So people kind of turned on it a bit. But I think in terms of like world building, that's one of the strongest games JRPGs in the last 10 years.
Yeah. And also you can get into a mech, jump into the air, turn in that mech into a motorcycle, and keep driving through the environment.
Yeah, and then go punch a giant monster in the face.
Yeah,
I mean, fucking rules.
They took, every single, like, we will at some point do this, and I think do a deeper dive on it, and I would love to do that and be a part of it and design it from toe to tip and lovingly dote on it. But it's like, Xenogears set up all of these concepts that like are, you know, that Takahashi and this team, this full team, have like, you know, addressed at some point in all of these subsequent games. Like Xenosaga was a lot of that religious theming and from Xenogears, and kind of putting it on a more macro scale, you know, that they had time to address. But like Xenoblade X was a lot of the gear and mech stuff that they established in Xenogears that I thought was so exciting and ambitious. And they turned it into an open world thing. And from what I've played and seen, it was very successful, but it just was on the Wii U. So,
yeah, it's like the last big, good Wii U game that has not been ported to the Switch, really.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's also like, to talk about the history of Monolith Soft a little bit, like, these, you can't talk about all the mechs and stuff without also noting that this studio was basically founded on a love for Gundam, like a distinct love for just giant robots, but also like the stories that can be told around them. We did a developer quest for Monolith Soft over on Axe of the Blood God, an RPG podcast, a competitor of this podcast. Got y'all. We did a developer quest for Monolith Soft, and one of the quotes I pulled from an Iwata Asks about Xenoblade Chronicles was talking about Takahashi and Sakaguchi, you know, one of the fathers of Final Fantasy, was talking about how one really clear memory that he had of Takahashi was that no sooner had he formed a separate team and gone to go work on his project that would become Xenogears and all that, that his desk became completely covered in Gundam models and toy guns. Like, the second Takahashi was given any level of like room to run with this stuff, he was like, okay, income, the Jungian the mechs, and we're just going all out. And there's like, that's just kind of the spirit of the Xeno series in general, is just always being 100% that shit all the time. Even when it may not have been the smartest decision to make or the best demographic decision to make.
Yeah. I mean, the real thing for me, that I've been really, I don't know, just excited to see this team do, is just, you know, and folks may not know this, but like when Xenogears came out, you know, it was a big two disc thing. Kind of famously, the second disc is kind of a mess. It's like an unfinished rush job that, you know, doesn't really end the story anywhere near at the depth that the first disc kind of set it up. It's like, it's unbelievable. It's like something you should absolutely experience for yourself. I can't immediately think of a game that does quite what this does. It's just go, oh, by the way, like all this other stuff happens. And then the game ends. It's like, it's so bizarre. But when you get to the end of the credits, it just says, thanks for playing Xenogears episode 5. And you're like, wait a second, what? Like, then you find out that, you know, they wanted to make this kind of this 6-game series, and really this was the most compelling chunk. And so they made it, and, you know, it didn't do well enough to address any of the rest of the planned series. And then they kind of, you know, they kind of repackaged it into whatever became of Xenosaga, which is actually pretty different, and it had to be different for legal reasons. But it's like, I've just, I don't know, I've really enjoyed watching them kind of take the ambitiousness of that original game and, you know, just spreading that out into, you know, 2 decades worth of, I think, very high quality, if uneven, JRPGs. And it's just been a real delight. Like, I was very, very sad about Xenogears not being able to continue. And there are rights issues there. There are, you know, Square Enix still owns the rights to that stuff, and Monolith can't really do anything in that universe anymore. So they'd have to do some sort of collab or get rid of the rights or whatever. I was sad about that for a long time, but Monolith Soft has been making, I think, increasingly competent games, honestly, for the past 20 years. And it's been, it's been a delight, I think.
Yeah, I genuinely think, like, 2 is a step back from 1 in a lot of ways. I think, like, 2 just kind of has eyes that are bigger than its stomach in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And, like, also is, like, trying to pave over a lot of that stuff with, like, how do we get mass market appeal? And the way that they got mass market appeal or attempted to was just, like, make the tackiest, horny characters they possibly could.
Sure.
No, they've always been like that.
They've done it. This is on a different level.
This was a gotcha.
Momo and Cosmos and stuff from Xenosaga, like, that shit was pretty wild, too.
The part you were talking about near of, like, the ice area in Xenoblade, right after that, you meet the big titty mech queen.
Mm-hmm, sure.
God, that's a good elevator pitch. That's a good elevator pitch.
Like, the thing is, the mountain ice area and the area after the big titty mech queen, genuinely great storytelling and, like, profound moments. But again, in the middle of that is the big titty, like, they've always been like this.
For sure, but, like, I don't know.
They surface it more in Xenoblade 2. I'm not going to disagree with you.
They really do. Like, Pyra and Mithra are just, like, something else.
I would say if they had launched Xenoblade 2 with the Pyra and Mithra designs in Smash Brothers, I think it
I
think people would have liked it a lot better.
Yeah.
Totally.
But I think, like, also, like, those... I don't disagree with you that that whole aspect is gross, especially some of the gacha blades you can get.
Yeah, that whole...
Yeah, it's the gacha system that really does that,
Does 3 have that, Eric?
3 does not have a gacha system. It has, like, a different thing for getting additional units and, like, classes that I think is a lot more interesting. But from what I understand, like, the Xenoblade 2 gacha system was basically just a way for them to add a bunch of extra flavor and also just, like, get a bunch of concept artists to make all these blades that they have for different stuff.
A bunch of them are
stuff.
Designed by different people.
Yeah, yeah, they basically went through Pixiv and just grabbed artists.
Yeah.
Which is, like, cool, but also leads to a lot of horny designs that they maybe should check.
Oh, my God. I took a screenshot of this character. I forgot to save it anywhere, but there's a character that I got the other day called Dahlia, who is, like, this ice bunny girl.
Oh, I didn't even Google that. I know who you're talking about,
Okay, yeah. Who's just, who's, like, wearing, like, this micro dress and just has actually, like, breasts that are bigger than her head. It's wild.
She has the most wild proportions I've ever seen in a, like, fictional character. Like, imagine if someone took Jessica Rabbit and put her in a funhouse mirror.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ow.
It's that off the wall.
I feel really bad for her because, like, the back pain has just got to be something else. Good God.
Yeah. And, like, some of the blades are actually really good designs and some are, like, really terrible designs. And it's a weird
mix.
Yeah,
I like some of the blades.
Because, like, they had so many designers working on these things and they should have exercised some degree of, like, hey, no, this is no to this one. Let's try a different one.
Right. And at least there's just some stuff of, like, the game just having, like, not having a super clear aesthetic a lot of the time. Like, the game just, like, one of the first, like, story characters you get is, like, one called Vess. And she's, like, got a cool enough design, but she looks like she's just straight up from a different video game. And so do the bad guys who were designed by Tetsunoya Nomura. They just, like, look nothing like Rex does. It's very strange. And, like, I think that's part of why that game is just, like, maybe kind of the not super beloved middle child of all of this stuff, but I'm, like, genuinely super curious. I know we're probably going to get into maybe some very light spoiler territory. I don't know. We'll see. But, like, I'm very curious about, like, why people are so gaga for 3 right now, because I have put in the work. I'm nearly done with 2. I'm going to put in a little bit more work to get through it to finally get to 3. And I'm hoping that there's a pot of gold at the end of this rainbow.
I mean, you say 2 is, like, not beloved, but it, is. Like, it is at least in maybe three beats it the best selling of any of the games with Xeno as the sub or predatidal.
Sure, but also it is the game that whenever I, you know, anecdotally talk to people, it is the one that everybody kind of points to and says, like, yeah, but also it's kind of embarrassing to, it's the most embarrassing one in a lot of ways.
I think that's also true.
That's an anime thing, though. Like, how many times have you recommended an anime series to somebody and been like, okay, look, but I gotta, like, tell you some things up front before we get... Evangelion, but...
That's every Chainsaw Man conversation I've had in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, I've been screaming at people to read Chainsaw Man, and it is also like, I promise it's about more than he just wants to touch boobs. I promise you, it's
that's
more
only
than
the
that.
First like 15 to 20 chapters. Once you get past that, it's fine.
And also that like desire is like very important to Denji's characterization and about how the systems in place take advantage of people who have naive worldviews. And sorry, this is not Chainsaw Man.
Yeah, Chainsaw Man is very good. I'm not going to disagree with anything.
The fact that he's a sex pest is an important part of his character. Is just like, it's like saying her ass is part of her character too.
He's not a sex pest. He is a freaking teenage boy who has a one-track mind and chainsaws for hands.
That,
all right.
That comment was more about Mineta from My Hero Academia.
Mineta deserves the void. Mineta should be launched into the sun. I hate that character.
But yeah, when you have to explain like My Hero Academia, it's like, okay, so there's a character named Miss Midnight. Maybe just ignore her. Don't Google that. It's and like, yes. And that, I think that's to some extent like Xenoblade 2 of like, Morag is one of the best designs in the series. But like, you can't really look at Morag and also not look at like sex snow bunny next to her.
They don't feel like they belong in the same universe, even sometimes. It's very strange.
I do think that's a strength of Xenoblade 3 is that it feels like it has a much more like comprehensive and put together view of what the world should look like, and framing it all around this war that is happening across the, you know, landscape really helps with that. You can very easily identify like what faction a character hails from. And they do mix in a lot of the fantasy races that they've created in Xenoblade, I imagine, for story reasons. I will be like full disclosure, I'm not there yet as to whether or not they explain any of that or not. But they do a really good job of just creating these really cool characters that also all look like they should be living in the same world and doing things. And there's not really outlandish designs in a way that feels jarring. There's just really neat, cool designs. There's so far I've got like awesome gun dude that kind of looks like Happy Chaos from Guilty Gear and like super cool sword lady and guy who heals people with his bullets and stuff. Like it's got more of a direction rather than that gotcha system we were talking about where it's like, okay, what's coming out of the machine this time to join my party and look a little ridiculous.
Speaking of like the different races in Xenoblade, quick up or down, like kill them or love them. What do people think about Nopons?
Oh, I love them.
I think they're fine.
I hate Nopons.
Play Xenoblade 3. I promise you. Play Xenoblade 3. You will love Nopons.
I largely dislike Nopons, except I think like they already hit the zenith with Ricky in the first game where like, okay, actually we've been misjudging these things. They are smart, mature, you know, they're fathers and sons and all that. Like they're cool characters. It's just that you don't see that from the outside. Then after that, they were just comedic elements and not so much characters.
Yeah. I mean,
For 3. I've not played 3, to be clear.
I can tie this into the Xenoblade Chronicles 2 discussion, which I want to be clear about one thing. Like we talked about like a lot of the really corny and tacky designs in Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I got no problem with big titty character designs. Like I'm a fan personally of that in a lot of ways, but they're just not very, they're oftentimes just very not interestingly designed. They're not, they're just corny. However, in Xenoblade Chronicles 2, the Nopon party member you get is a engineer who builds a robot sex maid who joins your party.
Weird science.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Weird science.
Now, Nier, do you like Nopons more or less than Shuchu, the little bear that gets crucified in
I think I like Nopons less.
You think you like Nopons less? Okay, interesting. Okay.
I will say this. In fairness to I wanted to bring up the robot sex maid part because that is one of the actual most embarrassing parts of Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Yes.
Where they your guy Tora has built a little robot and then it does the his cabinet opens up and it reveals that he has a bunch of like fucking
maid costumes,
fetish costumes for her to wear. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also she's the best party member in terms of strength. Good. So you can't not use her.
I don't have a problem with Poppy either. Like Poppy is actually like I like Poppy. She's cool. But it just they just had no restraint. They had no editor on any of this stuff when they maybe needed it.
Which that is also like the thing of like the contrast. You have that character, then you have like Morag standing right next to her.
Right. And Bridget is a character who I think like is a like I think pretty cool. Like Bridget is Morag's blade, and it is like definitely like a horny design, but I think she looks cool. Like she's got these two fire whips and stuff like that. Her legs are made of fire. It's cool. In fairness to the Nopons, I will say I did play Future Connected, which is the epilogue to Xenoblade Chronicles 1.
Right.
So it's technically the most recent thing that they've done other than Xenoblade Chronicles 3.
Right.
Right.
And you have two Nopon party members in that, and those two characters are actually really good. So I do believe that they have gotten better at writing Nopons. Like I'm willing to trust that in 3 especially they'll be better, because the two you get are, they're like a brother and a sister. They're the daughter and son of Ricky from the first game. Mm-hmm. They talk a lot about Ricky and like how he's like just a really good dad, like when he's at home and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's cute. It's very fun.
When you think about restraint in this team, there's obviously like the horny stuff, and the horny stuff is in most of their games, I'd say. But to me, it's been a while since they've taken a big swing, like putting, Jesus of Nazareth in the game.
I was waiting for us to talk about Xena Saga, the fact that Mary Magdalene and Jesus Christ are canonical in this world, and not just
characters.
Canonical but part of
characters.
The lore. Yes, it's crucial to the lore. And I've always, one of my favorite things is that if you ever see a fictional world in which a Bible or the concept of Christmas exists, that implies that Christianity is real in that universe. So just apply that whenever you want. Whenever you see a character mention Christmas in any way, you now know that Christmas exists, like Christianity exists in that universe, and Jesus Christ was in that universe at one point. It can lead to some fun paths. But the way that Xeno Saga specifically goes so out of its way to incorporate all this stuff, like the subtext is for coward's route of like, no, if we're going to use all this imagery, we might as well just use the whole buffalo while we're at it.
Right.
It's honestly, I think that's why I like the Xeno games so much, even when I bounce off of them, you know, tonally or for whatever other reason, is that they are so unabashed about like, no, we're going to do the thing. We're not going to half-ass it.
Yeah.
I think it was, this is a very old tweet, like literally years ago. It was the first time I'd thought about Xenoblade since watching G4 TV. But I remember, I think it was Christine Love tweeted something along the lines of like, turnabout is fair play with this stuff, because it is really interesting, like from a cultural perspective of the way that Western games and media and movies mine other cultures and other religions for like exoticized character designs and like ideas and stuff like that. It's just like, oh, here on this week's episode of Supernatural, we're going to kill Vishnu or whatever. Like they'll just, that just happens constantly in Western media. And like Xenosaga is one of the most like high profile examples of an Eastern like developer doing the exact opposite thing. I'm just like being like, all right, here we've made Jesus Christ a mini boss or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, for folks that really wanted that stuff, we were feasting in the mid 2000s because we had Xenosaga and we had Shadow Hearts. And like, those were two series on the PS2 that like, they were Eastern based developers that took these Western concepts and Western culture and really just went fucking ham with all of it. And it was That was chef's kiss. Beautiful time for those six games. The three Xeno sagas and the three Shadow Hearts. We've never done Shadow Hearts on this show. We should really do that.
We haven't. Another game with huge titty characters.
Yeah.
Three is wild.
Shadow Hearts 3 is very wild.
Genuinely wild. Yeah. Like, not a great game necessarily, but no. Absolutely wild.
Yeah.
For Xeno Saga specifically, like the writer Soria Saga, who is like Takahashi's wife, like she has a huge interest in Western philosophy. Like she is typically name dropped Jung and Nietzsche and Freud as like things that have influenced her writing. So like I think Saga was her working out this idea of, I believe she was raised religious. So she believes that like religion controls people and she wants to explore that. And that's like Saga is just an it was supposed to be a six game exploration of that concept. And then by like Xenoblade, they're like, I don't know, mechs, I guess. So like something was a little bit lost, but I think like it was lost in the way of, I think they got it out of their system of what they wanted to talk about.
Right.
Yeah. I think they got a little more interested in mechanically, like in the mechanical relationship between the player and the game. I think like, I think like Xenogears and Xenosaga were very much explorations of this like narrative and setting and things like that. And Xenosaga especially, did like kind of like didn't give a shit about being mechanically interesting at all. There were very, you know, as Nerium was pointing out earlier, like the turn-based battles were kind of agonizing in the Xeno Saga series, actually. They were just like, it was at a period where a lot of those battles were very long and animations were too long, and like Xeno Saga was a terrible example of that. And
I remember a fight where only Chaos could do damage. So if you didn't have Chaos level up, then you were just screwed.
Yeah. It was a mechanically very frustrating game. And I think mechanically this team has gotten much more interested in providing an enjoyable experience and then kind of layering an interesting story and characters kind of, over that, which I think is maybe the opposite of the philosophy they had kind of early going. But that shows. I think like that they've just made better games. I mean, I think you can definitely argue that Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is not as good, but it's like, I think for the most part they've made strides as they've gone.
Yeah, like Xenoblade Chronicles X is a like, it's essentially a Ship of Theseus analogy, but like about humanity and like what if a thing that is humanity but is not humanity begins creating a new planet for themselves for life. Is it still the same planet if they like rip it apart and create it to their own designs and designers? It like gets a little weird at some point in terms of how that story starts progressing, but I can see where they start going for it, and like that old aspect, because like Saga's not writing for them anymore, but she's still doing like scenario writing and stuff like that. But I can see where their attention is now, at least. It's not in the same, it's not as not subtle as Xenosaga was.
Yeah.
But also, like, I think some of that not subtlety worked to its benefit in a way that feels like with Xenoblade Chronicles 2, feels harder to defend in some way.
Yeah, I can see that.
And on, you know, like talking about the gameplay and stuff like that too, like I just do think that these games have, but I remember one of the big things people actually like, but more the so than even the British accents, people like talking shit about the original Xenoblade Chronicles on the Wii was just like, it's an MMO. It's just like used as MMO combat, so it's not fun. Because there was also just like, I feel like that has kind of gone out of the window too, but there was a time there where people were like, I refuse to play MMOs because you just press buttons.
Yeah.
And I was like,
That's what video games are.
But there was like this, I don't know, there was this maybe like post World of Warcraft pushback against a lot of that stuff. And there was like a lot of, I think it was partially just like so many video games getting like chasing the MMO bandwagon and stuff like that. You had like, you know, every major franchise had to have an MMO associated with it.
Yeah,
Star Wars,
Lord of the Rings, whatever. Followed by FF12, which was a very like MMO take on Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, and It's fun that you bring up 11, because I do think that, like, Xenoblade specifically is in conversation with, it's in conversation with 12, because it's using a lot of the, or 14, I think, because it's using a lot of the ideas, and it's built on a lot of the ideas of, like, positional attacks and stuff like that, and, like, building up meters and gauges. I think also, like, the world design is very 11. Like, the idea of you will just be walking around a big, giant place that is zero load times. It's all connected. You can walk up a mountain and see where you came from down below, and the skybox looks gorgeous. You see a waterfall, and it looks like you can still, 100 miles away, you can still see the mist bubbling out of the waterfall where it's hitting the ground.
Yeah.
And also a giant fucking dinosaur will just come out and eat you because they're at level 90 and you're level 17.
Yeah.
And that is such a Final Fantasy XI thing.
Yep.
I've been really impressed as I've been playing Xenoblade 3 specifically, in that it feels like they're encouraging you to find more in the world and explore more, because they have this idea of, like, secret areas that are like off the beaten path places that you have to kind of go looking for, and you get a little reward and a ping when you find them. And at first I found one and I was like, wait, that's it. There's, like, no container up here. There's no, like, special item. I don't get anything. Right. It's just like, hey, you found a cool place. And then I was like, oh, hey, yeah, I did find kind of a cool place. I took some screenshots and I went into first person mode and just kind of looked around. I was like, dang, this world's kind of rad. I mean, that harkens back to when Takahashi first pitched Xenoblade 1, infamously, he brought it into Nintendo. They just built a model of the two giants that were like fighting and had died, and that the world had grown on top of.
Yep.
They just brought a model in of that.
Yep.
And that was the pitch. They were
It's a good pitch.
It's a good pitch. The world is so cool.
Yeah. Honestly, like, that was like the main thing that got me into, like, interested in Xenoblade, was the idea that you are on two things that are so, like, inconceivably big that they just look like land to you.
Yeah.
And that different biomes grew depending on, like, what part of the body they were on. So, like, ones that saw sun a lot would be, you know, more of kind of the arid or, like, you know, hotter places. But then you get to, like, the small of the back and it's a frozen wasteland. Like, there's some cool stuff like that in there that they put a lot of really interesting thought into the world. And I don't know that I've seen all of that yet with Xenoblade 3, but it definitely has, like, some early touches of this, like, the design of the world is very important to what's happening in the story.
Yeah. Two is, like, the sky-based thing, and I think it works, like, does that super well.
Oh,
like, there's
one
too many caves in that game, because you're going into, like, into the Titan things. But, like, there's one area that's, like, just large. The islands are just large jellyfish that are, like, held together by, like, a, like, ramshackle rope bridges. And it's the most interesting-looking thing that, like, I can't be mad at that game, because that environment art is just so out of this world.
A Monolith Soft is just like, that one thing has never gone away. Like, they have I don't know how, what they were doing in Xenosaga. So I don't know if, like, there's any of that element in those games at all.
It's probably the worst in Xenosaga, I would say, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like, even go, like, on the Wii and on the 3DS, like, those are not the best looking versions of that game, obviously, because the definitive edition really overhauled the way that the game looks. But even back then, like, the draw distance that they were able to coax out of a fucking Wii, it was just wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, like, so the way that they've kind of been split up now is Nintendo has one Monolith Soft studio that does, like, actual game design, and, like, they do the Xenoblade games and stuff like that, and then they have another that's kind of does tech work, and then they work together sometimes to, like, make games. I think the one that works on tech is, like, they've improved a lot by working on other games. Like, you could tell with Xenoblade 3 they learned a lot by working on Breath of the Wild and, like, the dozen other games like Breath of the Wild 2 that they've improved. And I was looking at the Digital Foundry stuff for Xenoblade 3, which is leagues better, technically, than Xenoblade 2 was.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, is in that video for Digital Foundry, they're speculating, like, oh, this must be why Breath of the Wild 2 looks better than we thought, because they're learning, they're getting better, they're applying the stuff that they've learned in Xenoblade 2 to the next game, Xenoblade 3 to their next game as well. So I think, like, the way they're split up is, it's sad because the studio that does essentially mercenary work is the one that made Bat and Kaidos, which I think is a fucking fantastic game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But like, it does seem like it does. It is improving their tech ability over time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is Xenoblade 3 especially is an arresting game from a kind of a technical experience. I mean, obviously it still looks like a Nintendo Switch game, so it's not like it's not going to look like fucking Elden Ring or whatever, but it's like it's just all the stuff that Nier was talking about, draw distance and you know, seeing mm-hmm. stuff from a distance. You can do this, you can do that, you can see all these biomes, and you know, the scale is just, you know, impressive. It's something that they've done well in this console generation and the previous one. They're just getting much, much, much better at it, which is very cool. I really can't wait to see what they can do with even more powerful hardware, which we may or may not be getting at some point soon. So,
yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, it sounds like we've kind of dug into a lot of stuff. Like I said, we kind of touched on it a little bit, but I do really want to hear specifically like what sets Xenoblade Chronicles 3 apart from a lot of what we've already kind of gone over.
I'd love to step in on that role.
Yeah, please.
Please.
As somebody who, like I said, dropped off this series pretty hard after Xenosaga 1 and was never really enticed back in, I think the first thing that really caught me was the framing of this story. Like, Xenoblade 1 and Xenoblade 2 are both very much like the chosen boy. It mm-hmm. discovers powers and goes on a trip with his friends. And like, I've heard that story so many times. I'm very, very tired of it at this point, to be frank. And that's kind of why I like things like FF7 Remake and the way it's twisting some of that stuff, is at least like they're trying something different. They're doing something weird and new. And so Xenoblade Chronicles 3, I compared it to Tales of Arise earlier in that it has kind of the same vibes of, it's this group of warriors. So the setup of the world is that these nations, Agnes and Kevis, are at war at all times. They're just constantly at war. And they all have, everyone can only live for 10 years, 10 terms, as they call it. And at the end of their 10 terms, if they live that long, they are given this homecoming. Yeah, very rare, very rare. The game opens with everybody excitedly going to see the first homecoming at the colony that they're living at, because it's never happened before. But they're given like this send off that like turns them into these big gold particles. So everybody lives for 10 years. That's it. Like they
Logan's Run.
All you have. Yes, they Logan's Run it. and all of these. Basically two babies are bred and born and are sent out to fight in wars, because the primary method of energy on this world is life force. And so when they die, their spirit particles get sucked up by these giant mechs called Pharaonises that fill the flame clock. And it's all about like filling the flame clock. Like, you have to kill
I'm
other
all about
people.
Filling the flame clock.
Yeah. Yeah. People are saying this, you hear it.
You could be making up everything you just said.
I know. I'm actually pitching my new RPG.
But nope. It's all true.
But it starts off really cool because, like, I mean, right off the bat, they don't even like wait for something bad to happen. Like, the main character is immediately going, "Hey, y'all, this is kind of messed up. This doesn't seem like a very sustainable way to run a world. Everybody has to kill each other to stay alive, and we're all just being born to die and all that. That seems kind of bad. I don't want to die. Do you want it? That sounds bad." And eventually, due to plot reasons, three special forces from Agnes and three from Kevis are forced together and discover some secrets about the world and go off on a quest where they are now being hunted by the shadow organization behind everything, while also trying to deal with the fact that they are now caught. You know, they're both seen as traitors by their individual nations. And I think that alone really is interesting, because it's the same as Arise, where it's like, hey, the world's messed up and we're tired of just being at its whims until we die, we're going to overthrow it by force now. And that's like a really compelling idea of like revolution and liberation. And going, you know, as you go through the story, you can find all these side quests about different colonies where you solve their problems and free them from the flame clock and try to like make this world right again. I also think that like the we talked a little bit about, but the hero design is really compelling. So you have six characters in your party, and that is like your core party, and they can all swap around classes and learn from each other. And there's a really compelling sense of like learning different classes and mastering arts from those classes that is gives me like Final Fantasy Tactics vibes, where like mastering a class lets you then use those abilities in another class. So now you can really start to define roles and come up with cool combinations. But the hero design is really compelling too. There's I was going to post some pictures in here because we talked a lot about the gacha folks and how bad they were, but like here's one that I just ran into named Alexandria that I really think is neat, and I have to like gain five more levels to recruit her, but she's really awesome. There's also Juniper, who I am working on the side quest for at the moment, trying to find. But Juniper is a bow wielding hero that is currently getting a lot of attention because they are a non-binary character, and people are unhappy about that because even though Uchikoshi is out here dunking on ignorant people, there are people online who are still like, oh my god, this can't exist in a JRPG. But all of it goes to show that like this is a cast that is varied. It's a cast that has a lot of really cool and interesting characters on the fringes to go and discover even when you're not doing the main plot. And then the actual main plot, I was up until like 3 a.m. last night because I was in the middle. If y'all have played at home, it's that big scene that happens in chapter 3 near a waterfall, and that's all I'll say. But it was 30 minutes of the most unabashed bonkers stuff I've seen in an RPG since I played patch 2.5 of Final Fantasy 14. Like that level of stuff of like pre-Heavensward 14, where I'm just like, what is happening? What's going on? Oh my god, so much is happening. How is this all coming together so fast? And it paces its storytelling out so well, and having these individual hero stories that are really compelling. And then you go jump back on the MSQ, jump back on the main quest, and there are huge world reveals and big mech fights. The individual party members can all fuse into each other to become mechs, which is just really cool. They do like a fusion dance basically, and then become mechs, and that's both a battle mechanic and a really fun storytelling mechanic because they also share their memories when they do that. It is just a really cool vibe that I think is so different from Xenoblade 1 and 2, like, so notably different.
Everything that you've said sounds like exactly what I want and sounds great. And I'm watching like gameplay footage of like the combat right now, and I'm like, god, oh, what if I just deleted Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and jumped straight to 3?
So I mean, 3's a better video game, Nier, like, I'll tell you that. Like,
I've been hearing that like there are links and there are references that definitely like reward people who have played Xenoblade 1 and 2, but also you could really just jump in with this one. I am jumping in with this one. I watched like a brief lore explainer of what happens in the first game, so I have at least that knowledge, but I've like very little clue of what happens in 2. And I am eating it up. I am like, I'm probably about 30 to 35 hours in and still only on chapter 3 because I am just loving roaming around this world and fighting the monsters. I think the combat system's absolutely fantastic. It feels like it's learned the best lessons from previous games, as well as other stuff like the Tales series, about how to do combos really well and how to reward players for playing their role.
I was going to say, Eric, like I've been kind of frustrated at how deeply tutorialized everything is in the early going. But then I remember that I thought Xenoblade 1 and 2 did a really bad job of explaining a lot of its systems. So it's like, now I'm enjoying the battle system a lot more because I think I understand how everything works, which is great.
I've seen some people tweet some stuff that are like, oh my god, look at these tutorials. I feel like I need to just sit down, and you do need to like digest them. But number one, just about every time they pop a tutorial window in front of you, you close it, and then the game is immediately like, okay, let's put that into practice. Yep. Let's like, yeah. Here's a checklist thing and on the side.
They give you a checklist. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
And two, like once you learn the terminology that it's using, like the concept, I've talked about this before, but like the idea of special canceling has basically become part of like intrinsic gamer like literacy at this point. Right. The idea of, you know, even going back to fighting games, do a punch and then cancel it into a fireball. That's just something that people are gradually understanding because it's seeped into RPGs. It's seeped into action games. It's part of everything at this point. So, and that's like a big crux of what is happening in Xenoblade 3 is you are intended to kind of, okay, you have a basic attack and then you have an art, which is like your basic super move, not super move, like special move. And then you have a fusion art, which is you've taken a normal art, but you've combined it with another art that you've mastered from another class. So now when right. you, like the good example is you have a ground slam, right? It just hits the ground, does an AoE damage. Great. Good stuff. But say you've mastered a medic class. And so now you can fusion art a heal onto that ground slam. So when you ground slam, it also heals everybody in an AoE around you. And that's kind of the basis of what their class system and battle system does is it encourages you to like have everybody branch out into different things and then come up with these really cool ability combinations hybrids. That are then going to like feed into longer, more interesting combos over time.
Yeah.
God. Oh,
it's good. Yeah. It's good.
I love that the last few weeks have just been like someone describing a game near and you're like, God damn it.
Yeah. I did it to Jan and now it's happening to me. It's fucking karma. It mm-hmm. sucks. Mm-hmm. Cause yeah. I've got like, thankfully, I think No Man's Sky is a little bit, you know, to bed right now because it's just running through that event. But I've got that. I've got Warframe stuff to play. Mm-hmm. I've got I want to play Total War Warhammer 3. They got that Immortal Empires expansion coming out mm-hmm. sometime in the near future. I've got Final Fantasy to catch up on because they got that patch coming out. I got Live Alive. I've got this. I want to play that Into the Breach DLC. There's that like Mortuary Assistant horror game looks really cool. God, it's just nonstop. It's everywhere.
Guess what, motherfucker? It never ends.
It never ends.
Never ends.
But Xenoblade
keeps going.
Xenoblade has autosave and quick save and save just about yeah. anywhere. And
it's really nice.
It's like the benefit. I actually think I wouldn't like this game as much if I was playing on Steam or on my PlayStation because
yeah.
I love being able to just pick up, play it on my couch, play it in bed. I was watching the Evo Top 8s and playing a bunch of Xenoblade during all yeah. of that. And like it has ups and downs and a lot of moments where you can be like, okay, something like story is happening. I'm going to put it in my dock and play it on the TV. And now like I'm just right. running around doing collectible quests. So I'm going to put something on while I play this or whatever.
Spoken like somebody who doesn't own a Steam Deck yet.
Hey, I have a Steam Deck. I have a Steam Deck. Let me tell you, that bad boy can play a whole lot of old video games.
Yes, it can.
And that's all we're going to say about that right now.
It sure can.
I'm googling Xenoblade Chronicles X emulation.
Xenoblade Chronicles 3 also has a hit F to pay respects button, which I think is great. Mm-hmm. You will find dead people on the battlefield all the time, and you need to go over and flute their souls home. Which is play them off. It's very Yuna, Final Fantasy X kind of stuff, which I think is kind of fun. The overworld exploration stuff is really fun. I do think it is pretty funny that you just see this like what looks like a blanket of stars, and it's just all the little flat 2D texture collectibles that you can just run into. Mm-hmm. It's very, very mm-hmm. funny. I think the menuing in Xenoblade, this is so small, but it's like, I think the menus in Xenoblade Chronicles 3 are way better than, yes. 1 and 2. So there's just a lot of like quality of life stuff that I think is much better in 3 than 1 and 2. I've played 1 most recently, on the Switch, and just a lot of just big improvements there. So, this game is very cool. Like I picked it up this week and I knew I was going to play it. I intended to play it on my cruise. However, the internet on the ship was so bad My Switch could not even say, hey, we're going to check to see if you can play this game that you pre-ordered. Couldn't even do that. No. So I didn't play the game until I got back. Picked it up just so I could really talk about it on the show. But now I'm kind of like, oh, I might like see this through, which is like pretty rare for me in the middle of a year to just like play something from start to finish. Honestly, it's pretty rare for me.
Especially something that's 90 hours long.
Yeah. But this is one of those games that I, you know, kind of like Elden Ring. I'm like, okay, I think I'm really going to stick this thing out. So, yeah, it's really good. So pick it up. If you're like even remotely interested in the other games in the series or are interested in them, but maybe you didn't even like the first two, I would say like they've done enough stuff in three to maybe compel you to change your mind on the series, but it's very, very good. It's probably the best thing they've made. Maybe ever. I think it's very good.
Mm. Interesting. Again, they just kind of keep improving, which is fantastic. Like not even tech in terms of like game design and like to an extent story, though, I definitely can see people who are like, no, Xenogears and Xenosaga were the top and these do not compete. Oh, but
this one's got a banger story though. It goes places. It goes places.
I was going to say the most important aspect of Xenoblade 3 is that it turns out all my reporting was correct. So when I reported on it with details last year,
at the end of the day, I was right. Out it was and that's the best kind of win.
That's all that like, matters.
Whether I play the game or not, I was right. And that's important.
That's I think that's what we all wanted to come here together and say together as a crew was to say Imran was right.
You know, they have that famous copy of Okami on Wii with the IGN watermark on it.
Yep.
I think we really need like a boxed copy of Xenoblade Chronicles 3 with Imran saying I was right on the back of the box or something. No context, absolutely none. Yeah.
Was it worth getting blacklisted by Nintendo? Who can say?
Who can say? Whatever. Who can say?
Whatever. Nintendo wasn't sending us games early anyway. All righty. We should wrap up. That was a pretty fruitful conversation, I think. Especially since Imran was right. But Eric, thank you so much for being on with us.
Absolutely. It was a joy. I always love coming on this podcast and talking with y'all folks and especially about a game that I have honestly had to just turn around and be like, well, Monolith Soft good, Xenoblade Chronicles good. I am a stan now. I admit defeat.
So Normandy FM, the entire Xenoblade series, when?
Oh, wow. Ken, I have to make Ken play Fallout New Vegas first. That's the most important part.
Okay.
I am so close to cracking that topic with him. It will happen eventually. Give it to
I think Ken's going to really like that game.
Yeah,
He likes Cyberpunk. And I've been trying to tell him that if you like Cyberpunk, Fallout New Vegas does better. Everything that game does better than better. Cyberpunk.
Yeah. It did it 8 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Not broken and not badly written.
Well, I don't know about the broken
maybe
part,
a little broken.
It's pretty broken.
Okay, broken, but can be fixed.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, like literally playable. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I love that idea, Eric. If you need me to be your like spy on the inside, getting Ken to play New Vegas, he would love New Vegas.
By spy on the inside means we're Ken's bosses. We can say we're gonna do a lot of Fallout New Vegas news.
Yeah,
soon.
Drop
it in casual conversation. You know,
we're gonna launch our New Vegas vertical.
Finally, buy him a sandwich for lunch that day, and it's just got a wad of cash in it that says "Play Fallout New Vegas."
Hey, we bought you the bloatfly.com. It's just the Final Fantasy. New Vegas vertical.
This is our
we need you to interview Matthew
House.
Perry. So,
God, please.
Fuck. All right, we really got to wrap it up after that. I can't go on. But before we wrap on up, I'm just going to say real quick that you can find me on Twitter at Miriam Strum. You can find Eric Van Allen where?
You can find me on Twitter at CMoosie. You can find me by day over at Destructoid, writing articles there. And you can find me by evenings and night doing Acts of the Blood God at Blood God Pod and Normandy FM at Normandy FM Show.
Like Stripperella, you have a job at night and then another job at later night.
Yeah, yeah, because that really worked out well for Stripperella and Batman and everybody else who's done that. So I only see good things in my future from this.
Where can people follow you, Imran?
You can find me on Twitter at ImranZUMG, or you can find me at fanbyte.com, where I do most of my writing. I've been doing a lot of Evo writing this week. Also, go to the Fanbyte Discord at fanbyte.casa, and you can at me, and I will answer questions about whatever you want.
Cool. John, where can people follow you?
You can find me at Floppy Adult. I'm locked down right now, but you can still request me, and I might let you in. Who knows?
Ooh, exclusive John news.
I just love not being perceived. I don't know how long this is going to go on, but it's just, it's nice. It's nice to just be chill. And you probably really can't find me in many other places. I don't really do a whole lot of writing these days. Just kind of...
John's actually a spy. John keeps it on the down low.
Yeah, a little bit. You can find me. You can find me there and some other podcasts and blah, 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 blah. But yeah, thanks.
And you can find one of our wonderful producers, Paul Tamayo, at Polymeo on Twitter. Paul has also written a couple of things for us in the recent past that you can read on fanbyte.com. And hey, while you're at it, read one of my things on fanbyte.com. I just wrote a massive No Man's Sky tips guide. We have the thing on the website where if you tweet something from Fanbyte, it gives like an estimated time to read. And the estimated time to read on my No Man's Sky tips guide, 45 things the game doesn't tell you, is 41 minutes.
minutes.
You couldn't have gotten up 4 more minutes?
Yeah, come on here. Get that bad boy up to 45.
Yeah, I mean, it needs to be at least as long as an episode of syndicated television. So.
Nearly as long as this podcast.
I want to spend the entire time that an episode of The Good Wife is on to read a No Man's Sky guide.
Well, you could open that one up, or you can open up any of them and just leave that open up on your computer for a little while. Click on all those little animated things that show you like Final Fantasy 14 and whatever. Those are ads. You want to click on those. It makes the experience way better. And another thing that makes everybody's experience way better is sidling on over to the bar. The 99 Potions Bar. Does the bar have a name? We've never named the bar.
We've never named it. We'll have to think about that.
Let's do that in a meeting next week. Let's sit down and be like, let's figure out the name for the bar.
I love that.
Yeah.
Or,
I love this.
Or go to fanbyte.com into the 99 Potions thing and channel.
What should the tavern be called?
Tell us what the bar is called.
Yeah. Please send us your suggestions for what the bar that we go to should be called.
Please do.
Now, while we're in the bar with no name, though, we might as well grab ourselves a drink off the high shelf. Come on together and give it a good old...